Chapter 12. What can I do as an individual? There's actually so much you can do. People acting alone can't change the outlook to any useful degree, but collective action on a global scale can have an enormous impact. This section contains lots of essential practical advice on how you can foster change acting collectively. In the book, this is broken into 8 sections. The first section is called Communicate, Communicate, Communicate. Changing the way societies view the world, how they think about economic growth, individuality, democracy, climate change, and species loss, will take a phenomenal amount of work. Changemakers need to be persuasive and have excellent communication skills. Encouraging people to change the way they think takes time, skill, and patience. It's also complicated because it needs to take place in so many different levels. On the surface, it might seem that people quickly get it, after an evening seminar, for example, or a 3-day workshop. But deeper habits of thinking are much more powerful than those that are front of mind. Exercises to persuade people to see the world differently need to work at the surface level and at the deeper, subliminal, muscle memory level, where reflexes and habits lurk to reinforce and embed the message. Take dieting as an example. Let's assume I tell myself that I need to drop 10 pounds, so 4.5 kilos. I plan for weekday lunches of steamed vegetables and tofu. I go to the gym, I deny myself ice cream, and my mind is convinced that my plan will work. But within a few days, one mid-afternoon perhaps, my hand starts wandering towards the cookie jar, and without noticing, my arms, legs, and feet follow. Some deeper force inside remembers how delicious those chocolate cookies are and how good I feel when I eat them. Front of mind is clashing with deeper, subliminal forces. Or try this one. You've lived in the same house in the same street for 15 years, and then you move to another part of town. For weeks, planning, logistics of the everyday realities of the move fill your consciousness like sand in a jar. There's no part of you that doesn't know that you're moving house. But 3 weeks later, you get in the car to drive home from work, and you suddenly find yourself driving to your old house, because some deeper memory is still there, directing your hands on the wheel and your route planning mind. It takes repetition and reinforcement to change thinking. So the first thing you need to do if you want to help create change is learn the facts. You need to learn the facts as well as the logic of what needs to change and why, until you know it all backwards. You need to learn how to present a case and give yourself a crash course in persuasive communication. Always speak from the heart, but with a rock-solid foundation of fact. If you know your facts and understand the science and the arguments, you'll be better prepared to respond to awkward questions. Learn the facts like you're going into an exam. Imagine what the exam questions might be. What about the trick questions designed to throw you off? This is a bizarre world where facts have become optional extras, where winging it and cheating have become as common as using one credit card to pay off another. But physics doesn't defer debt to some future that never comes. You can't put a lid on a volcano. Climate change is about facts. Nature is not even the teeniest bit interested in fancy accounting, statistical manipulation, and lies. The planet's not persuaded by sleight of hand. Now is the time to respect facts and the truth. As Malcolm X said, truth is on the side of the oppressed today. It's against the oppressor. You don't need anything else. Second, learn to speak up. And then go and speak to your parents, your neighbours, and all your friends and test your communication skills. Your networks are the best place to start. Communicate the urgency, explain the facts, and take note of their responses. If someone's sceptical or dismissive, don't take it personally. Conflict with those close to you won't help. But listen to their objections. Are they based on emotion, structural realities in their own lives, perhaps, or a misunderstanding of the facts. Try to understand, because that helps us all to move forward. But remember, the objective is to communicate and persuade, not to compromise. There's no time for half measures here, or weak-hearted solutions. Then ask those that you've convinced to do the same, to speak to their parents, neighbours, friends, and spread the message. Understand, however, that some people will never get it. It's not possible to convince everyone. Based on our experience, 20 to 30% of people in the rich world have a relatively good understanding of the climate change problem. They know that recycling is not enough. Another 20 to 30% are stubborn and they refuse to listen. They choose to sing the la-la song, no matter how well communicated, logical, or persuasive the message you deliver. These people are not able, psychologically, to internalize the truth. Perhaps it's just too hard to accept the pain of knowing what will happen. Perhaps it's too painful for them to accept their role in adding to the problem. Perhaps they just enjoy the rewards of their current life too much to give it up. Sometimes the people who can't be convinced will be strangers. Sometimes they'll be friends or family. It may be hard to accept that someone you love is never going to get it. Keep trying, but don't lose yourself in trying fruitlessly to convince someone who can't listen. The third thing you need to do is toughen up. The push for change will inevitably lead people into conflict with others. So change makers, us included, need to toughen up emotionally so that they can keep going. Sensitivity is clearly a good thing. The new system must have empathy at its core. But as we are going to discuss in a moment, there are many emotional blows ahead, and believe us, we know, and they can flatten the fight out of you. Try to turn the empathy you have inside into something constructive to try and understand more about the challenge. You don't have to change who you are, but there are ways to make the pain you feel useful. Toughening up doesn't mean you have to grow calluses on your heart or somehow learn not to feel. That's damaging in other ways. Rather, it's about strengthening your resolve to turn your pain into something good. It's important to acknowledge the pain, to call it by its name, and not to deny the terrible things that are happening. Those who can respond positively to their emotions begin to build strength. Those who have experienced climate grief have a valuable ability, so talk about it. Talk to others about how it hurts and why, and then share it widely. What's the point of hiding it away? You're not going to save others from suffering by suffering alone. There's more of this in the next section. If you build relationships with like-minded people, it's easier. Work with the 20 to 30% who already get it. Persuade the 40 to 60% who are open-minded but ill-informed. But remember too that no matter how tough people are, the reality of what's happening will still be painful for them to understand. The next thing you need to do is build your network. Building a network so that you're part of a like-minded community brings comfort and strength to those suffering from climate grief and the sense of isolationism which often accompanies climate action. There's a very powerful positive emotional shift as people learn to view themselves not as individuals alone in a sea of troubles, but as an integrated part of a movement that's dedicated to shared mutual responsibility and that cares about wider society. So work with those who understand this too, because that will help you stay strong. Check in regularly on the information links at the back of this book to remind yourself about what's happening and make new connections. Set up regular meetings, book clubs, and support networks for those who understand. And finally, in this section, always keep the goal in mind. Remember that the goal is to create a better world with compassion and dignity. Cynics may tell you that what you're trying to achieve is utopian nonsense, that it's all very well to dream of paradise filled with peace and love, but what really makes the world go round is money, power, and knocking a few heads together every now and then to keep everyone in their place. Cynics may tell you that bad apples will always cause trouble, that it takes more than peace and love to keep societies running. Well, that's probably true. but starting from a principle of dignity, equality, companionship and compassion is surely a better place to start than a base of misery, inequality, loneliness and greed. So remember the goal. The second section of this chapter looks at being prepared for pushback. The front line of change making can be an exciting place, but it can also be lonely at times. Especially at first, you might feel like the lone party pooper crying hurricane while everyone else is still partying on the beach. The most beautiful weather often precedes a storm. But this also makes it hard for many people to imagine that there's even a little shower of rain coming, let alone some apocalyptic change. So people will tell you that you're crazy, or they may just ignore you and party on. They may reason that if it was as serious as you say, people in authority would have done something or said something or put out a warning by now. And who are you anyway? You're not some kind of government-backed climate scientist. How come you're so smart and everyone else is so dumb? People will likely roll their eyes and mock you for taking this seriously. Knowing about the reality, the immediacy, the consequences of climate change while everyone else keeps partying can make you feel like you're in some terrible dream, like watching puppies scampering onto a busy freeway with cars and trucks driving around them. You're screaming for drivers to stop, but no sound comes out. You might feel like you're going crazy. And you'll probably doubt yourself and doubt that this is really serious. You may start to wonder if everyone else is right. People may tell you that all this climate stuff is a hoax. So take comfort. You're in very good company. It's very common for societies to exclude the people who speak out about climate change. Just think about Greta Thunberg, the young Swedish climate activist with the blonde pigtails, who told all those suits at the Davos meeting in Switzerland that they should be ashamed of themselves. She's mocked and slandered all the time. People have said that she's mentally ill, an indoctrinated tool of her parents, irritating and an annoying little brat. We ourselves are well aware from personal experience that even those who are supposedly on the same side can work against you. A couple of years ago, three journalists from Greenpeace magazine in Germany came to interview one of us. They came to our home in Switzerland, asked about something we had written about our activism and about our background, and then, and this is the really clever part, published an article which poked fun at us for using coasters to protect an old table. I mean, that's just weird. Ancient tropical rainforests are burning down, releasing all their stored carbon into the atmosphere, encouraged by giant multinational corporations, and Greenpeace chose to mock someone for fighting for climate change for respecting a piece of furniture. Massive fossil fuel companies with more money than any medium-sized country have been lying about the hydrocarbon climate change link, in fact actively denying the link for decades. But Greenpeace's eco-warriors decided to denounce someone on their own team for recycling. Also common in the fight for radical reform is something called gaslighting, a particularly sinister, corrosive and abusive form of psychological isolation. Gaslighting is the systematic erosion of another person's connection to reality by denying facts, their physical surroundings, or their emotions or perceptions. If an individual tries to correct damaging behaviour, and the other person simply denies that it's even happening, that's called gaslighting. You might have experienced it already in playful forms where someone close to you denies having done something that you both know they did, but they do so convincingly that you actually begin to doubt what's true. Hardcore denial by some politicians about climate change is becoming less common, but the link between fossil fuel combustion and climate change itself is still fair game in some countries. Scott Morrison, who's now the Australian Prime Minister, once waved a lump of coal in the nation's parliament, goading members not to be afraid of it. Fossil fuel companies have practiced gaslighting like this for years. It's deliberate. It's a classic form of the ploy of divide and conquer, to keep the opposition divided, confused, and so unable to organise itself to challenge authority. If you're faced with this, It may be useful to recall the Gary Larson Farside cartoon produced around the time of the BSE, mad cow disease, crisis in the 1990s in Britain. It pictured a cow lying on a psychiatrist's couch saying, "Maybe it's not me that's mad, you know. Maybe it's the rest of the herd that's insane." It may be little comfort sometimes, but the truth with climate change is that the rest of the herd really has gone insane. Think about it. To experience record temperatures year after year, increasing storms, droughts, and massively more wildfires, and all this happening in places where you live, where your friends live, where you go on vacation. To see all this happening with your eyes and experience it with your body and not want to intervene and somehow stop what's happening, you really do have to be insane. The only insane thing is not to react. So when someone tells you, stop worrying about what's happening, or tells you to get a proper job or have children so you won't have time to worry about all this, take a deep breath. People often attack others when they feel threatened or frightened or defensive about their own life choices. Societies find it hard to accommodate differences from the normal way of thinking, and they resist any push for change. Normal may not be good, but it's easier than change. Agitators for change are annoying to those who just want an easy life. So remember, you're not alone. You're the sane one. The third section in chapter 12 deals with being prepared to grieve again as your eyes learn to see. When you really understand what's happening, it's hard. It's like a bereavement. That's why so many climate activists suffer from depression. It can feel like standing in the middle of a river trying to stop the raging water with your bare hands. The grief can be searing because there's so much to grieve about. The destruction of so many beautiful, sophisticated ecosystems crushed under shopping malls or destroyed by mining, forest fires and rising sea levels. The death of so many innocent creatures, the mountain marmots and the Indonesian proboscis monkey with his magnificent long nose, whose forest home has been burnt and razed to the ground just so some financial speculators in London or Frankfurt or Hong Kong can make a tidy profit in palm oil futures. Humanity could have avoided all this. Those in charge have chosen to do nothing, even though they knew what would happen. They knew about climate change and they knew about the suffering that would result if they didn't act. Powerful, influential people have known about climate change for years, but they have deliberately concealed and twisted information to prevent change for their own selfish interests. Who, with knowledge and a conscience, would not grieve at the greed of those in big business, as well as those who finance and support them, when they still lie, even now, to protect their money? Grief and anger are natural, compassionate responses to such outrage. But those of us who are fighting for change have to stay strong and gain strength from each other. So seek out others to share what you feel and try to help others who are struggling. People cope or struggle in different ways. So remember to check in, call and listen, and with compassion. Remember, you are not alone. There are things that each of us can do. But divided we fall, united we rise. The fourth section of this chapter deals with myth-busting. One other very important area where you can make a difference is myth-busting. Many people mistakenly believe that they are genuinely helping to avert a planetary disaster by recycling or taking fewer flights or buying an electric car or donating money to charities. This is also a major barrier to change. People have to realize that none of these things does any good on their own. In fact, they often make things worse because they promote a false sense of progress. Because many people think that these actions work, as a global society, humanity does less. So myth-busting is essential. A good place to start is with many people's messianic obsession with technology. Most conversations about climate change turn pretty quickly to the magic fairy dust of technology or to clever financing. but anything that allows the central elements of the system to continue as now, endlessly extracting more resources and producing ever more emissions, can't work. This is a difficult reality for many people to grasp, especially those who've been indoctrinated into the dangerous belief that humans are smarter than nature. People will tell you that technology and science are great. They're the reason people don't die at the age of 35 from typhus or the Black Death anymore. It's thanks to human innovation that societies have clean drinking water. Well, some of them do. SUVs and diabetes medication, so they can live their lives as they want to instead of being slaves to nature. But this masters of the universe thinking encourages societies to think that human ingenuity, rather than behaviour change, can solve every problem. For centuries, alchemists tried to turn base metal into gold. Now they know it's possible. But all that's needed is a particle accelerator and huge amounts of energy, and the amount of gold produced is tiny. Thanks to technology, it's also possible to grow diamonds without waiting millions of years. Scientists have also learnt to split the atom, to clone sheep and grow meat in a laboratory. It's also possible to seed clouds to make rain. These are all astonishing achievements, and to many, they're proof that humans can triumph over nature. But these scientific developments, impressive though they are really only proof that humanity can tinker at the edges of a vast, finely tuned, awesomely complex physical, chemical, and interconnected biological system. The planet's atmosphere is changing chemically, and on a scale that few people can even imagine. Slowing this process is about the natural laws of chemistry, biology, and physics. There's no technology that can stop climate change or control the uncountable heat waves, droughts, floods, storms, burning forests, melting permafrost, or the multiplying viruses, insects, and bacteria that will result. So repeat after us. Technology will not save us. But people working together with compassion and a dose of reality just might. The best chance humanity has is for people to work together for change. That might sound crazy, but it's less crazy than thinking that some geeks in a garage are going to come up with some techno fix that will make them millionaires and save the planet just in the nick of time. End of chapter 12, part 1.